podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
In 2003, Nike signed 13-year-old Freddie Adu to a seven-figure contract. But Freddie didn't live up to the hype. He has turned down every single documentary project looking closely at the details of his career. Until now.
People are going to look at everything you did because of the hype surrounding your arrival and what they think you can be.
I'm Grant Wall, and this is American Prodigy, Freddie Adu, from Blue Wire Podcasts.
Good evening and welcome to another episode of Touchline Fracker, joined by a very, very busy panel this evening. All the big clubs are represented, for better or worse. Let me go around and introduce everybody. I'll start with you, Mush, your first time on the main pod.
Thank you very much.
How are you doing, sir?
I don't know, mixed bag, really. Been cheered up by the performance we've just seen from someone else. So, you know, I don't know, my Klopp level rant might be going down a bit, but I'll see how I'm feeling when the time comes. But
yeah, me and Seb will make sure you remind you of where you stand, yeah? Dan, I think he was indirecting your club there, brother. We were just on a Discord live and you're straight in the mixer. How you doing?
Yeah, I'm all right, man. I'm all right. Like, pain is synonymous with my lifestyle now.
The way you're rubbing your hands, though, is like you want to wring somebody's neck, man.
Fam, I've made a bad decision in life, yeah? So, Toby's just moved in with me, innit? So, this is going to be one long season. So,
oh, yes.
It's going to be one long season. So I need to just get with the picture.
Seb, brother, how you doing, man?
Brother. Ugh, birds flying high.
You know how.
Hey, listen, I'm feeling good today, brother. I'm feeling good today,
something,
man.
Something light.
Something light. Nothing too heavy.
Nothing too heavy, man. But we'll get into that. Tobes, I said we were the only team who got a good result. And you quite emphatically corrected me before the pod started. You're grinning from ear to ear.
Yes, I am.
Not sure why, but I guess you're happy.
I'm happy. Yeah.
How you doing?
I'm good. I'm glad to be here, man.
Yeah, top of the table, yeah?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, I mean, not something like that. You're literally top of the table.
I know. Yeah, but I'm not trying to make a big thing out of it.
Okay, it's not going
to
loss.
You don't want me to hone in on it, yeah? I don't want to make a big thing about it. Semi, how you doing, man?
Yeah, I'm good, bro. I'm good. Good to be back, man.
Yeah, good. It's been a while. How's the family?
All good, man. All good. How's work?
Yeah, work's good. Work's good, man. Don't ask me silly questions. before we have to do the usual plug or the socials. So Twitter, you all follow us on Twitter, so I won't really bother with that. But Discord, the Discord live was popping today because it was truly a super Sunday. We've been on there since 2 o'clock. All the big teams played bar Liverpool today. So yeah, sign up to the Discord live. Obviously, you've heard some snippets of it. It gets really raw. Some things we really don't want people to hear. But if you happen to be in the Discord live at the time, then crack on. Those of you who listen to all the different club podcasts, if you're a fan of the visuals, sign up to the YouTube, subscribe, click that like button. That's my Jake Paul impression. So subscribe and click that like button. And with all that being said, let's get into it. Dan, listen, I'm going to start with you just because your game is the freshest in my mind. So it's a 2-1 loss to Wolves. I listen to Touch of Gooners every week, so I know how you feel about Arsenal's current predicament, but for our listeners who don't necessarily, give us a little breakdown about your mental state at present.
Well, I mean, my mental state is fine, to be honest. I knew that what performance we were going to get. hoped for a different one, but alas, I was not presented with one. It's the same old Arsenal, man. I think there was, what, no shots on target in that match or in the second half? Pretty much par for the course, really. Like, what can I say? We can't create chances. Teams literally sit back and say, come, give us your best shot. Come attack us. Wolves were happy to sit, defend their one goal lead. And we had no answers, man. Pathetic, pathetic football. Shocking.
Mm. And when you look into the performance a bit deeper, sorry, Tom's smile is killing me. When you look deeper into the performance, yeah, what happened? Obviously, the game started off pretty ominously with that clash between Jimenez and Luiz, and I've seen some reports that Jimenez is awake and responsive, which I'm glad to hear about. But yeah, going down into the kind of the minutiae of your performance, what can you give us? What's going on, basically?
Fam, like, we're just crap, innit? Like, there's not even, as much as you can talk about tactics, this, that, and the other, yeah, but we're actually just bad. Like, there's so many players who are not playing to their level, or so many players who are showing us that this is their level, I should say. Like, Aubameyang was pathetic today, but obviously he's got credit in the bank, so I'm not going to get onto him too much. I think Saka, he's also got credit in the bank, young player, come through, but he had a poor game today. You know, Willian, the less said about that guy, the better. He's a criminal, and he's swindled us for 100k a week for the next 3 years. I don't know what sort of Kool-Aid he was selling, but Arteta seemed to have bought that hook, line and sinker. The midfield, centre midfield, no legs, no passing ability, no ability in the tackle, just pathetic. Probably the worst centre midfield pairing in the top 10.
Ceballos, no passing ability.
Who's Ceballos? That guy's a false image, yeah. And wherever Lewis is, everyone needs to act
on it, bro.
And send him that video, that, because he was talking rubbish. Like, this guy, he can't pass the ball. He should be a salsa dancer, yeah. He does three pirouettes before he does anything useful with the ball. If he tries to find anyone further forward, the ball's lost. He can't run. He's tenacious, but for all that's not worth anything because he's weak. He gets bullied. Xhaka's the same, can't move, flat-footed, can't pass unless he's perfect, needs 8 touches before he can release the ball. Rob Holding, boy, he was just getting sent back to Bolton, you know, on a, what's it? What's that coach company? Yeah, he wasn't even getting Virgin Trains. He was getting that coach.
Oh, National Express. Bus, yeah. Arriva. Is it Arriva?
We're saying party bus.
Cool. So you mentioned some interesting points there. So I've got some follow-up questions. I'll ask the group. I'll give you a second to sort your head out, Dan. So obviously, Dan's mentioned Aubameyang and Saka. Dan, if you guys don't know, writes really good articles. So check those out. One of the things that he highlighted was the need for Aubameyang to return to the middle, this phantom middle part of the pitch, which would then lead to positive results for Arsenal. I think this is what? Is this the second or third game playing through the middle now, Dan? Yeah, Dan doesn't want to.
It's the second.
Cool. Thank you. Thank you for that delayed response. So it's the second game through the middle. I can think the first game I watched that, didn't have many chances, fair enough. Game against Leeds. Today wasn't really the case. The ball got to him a decent amount of time, and the other times he just wasn't really on his feet. So obviously you guys have come off the kind of the Ozil contract debacle, where you've kind of given a top player who's declining a big contract. How is it looking? Let me ask Mush. Looking at Aubameyang, because I'm pretty sure you read Dan's articles as well, and you've heard about this phantom space in the middle of the pitch where he needs to be. So watching Aubameyang's performances, do Arsenal fans need to be worried, or is Dan right and does he have a lot of credit still in the bank?
It's interesting, isn't it? Because where you've got credit in the bank, what probably applies as credit changes, right? The whole complaint was that Lacazette's, you know, arguably the worst starting striker in the league. So suddenly we see Aubameyang and he's doing the job even worse. So what does that say about Aubameyang in the rankings in this division, right? And then Also, we saw Willian, Laka, we saw Burna Boy in the changing room after a win against Fulham, first game of the season. The soundtrack's changed, man. So, I don't know. So, Dan's written an article, but we've seen the solution happen and the result didn't come. So, I don't know. Long may this continue, but it might be in the market for another 50 mil striker. I'm not sure.
It's tense. I think what they can take some reprieve from and what they can smile about is that when Lacazette is usually up top, there are no chances really. He plays a part in that, his lack of a back to goal game. So the fact that some chances were coming through does suggest that there's something more positive about Aubameyang being up top. Obviously, Tobes, you get to enjoy Harry Kane put on a show every week. What do you see when you watch Aubameyang up top?
It's a weird one because on his day, he is a world-class striker. I think a lot of people get the whole world-class player v world-class striker thing confused. And they focus on his game outside of goals, which isn't good. We know that, but he scores a lot of goals. He's built up a reputation for himself. But I think what we're seeing now this season is even worse performances when he's not scoring than what we saw before from Aubameyang. With the exception of Man United, this guy is just not contributing to much with regards to build-up. We already know that he doesn't contribute much anyway, but he's now offering next to nothing. And when Arsenal are not creating anything as well, it's just a mad tornado effect. And it's like, this guy's putting up stinkers, you're not creating chances, et cetera, et cetera. So I do hear Daniel saying he's got credit in the bank, and I do agree to a certain extent, but a player who's meant to be a world-class striker simply cannot have performances that we saw today. So it's just not good enough. And the spotlight needs to be shined firmly on him this season for sure.
Yeah, we'll be watching. And when I spit bars in a ring, man, I go
hard last and tan. Football is back in full swing. You might not be at a game this year, but you can still be in on the action at BetOnline. BetOnline is going the extra mile to make sure you can get in on every possible chance to win this season. From game spreads and totals to team, player and coaching props, BetOnline gives you more options to wager than anywhere else. You can get in on their season opening bonuses today and start off wagering on wins, division and championship futures all day, every day. Head to BetOnline today and take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. Don't forget to use the promo code BLUEWIRE at betonline.ag. That's BLUEWIRE, all one word. Bet Online, your online sportsbook experts. When I spit bars in a ring,
man, I go hard last and tan. And you mentioned stinkers, and that allows me to segue quite nicely into your game against Chelsea. Oh, wow. So, Sammy, I'll come to you, sir. So, a 0-0, a potential, well, let's call it top of the table clash. The winner would have went top of the table. 0-0 draw today at Spurs. What were your thoughts about your performance, Spurs' approach, and how the game played out?
So I expected Spurs to approach the game how they did, so that wasn't a surprise there. I was disappointed in our overall play in the sense that I felt like we didn't move the ball as quickly as we have done in previous games versus other low blocks. So when we faced low blocks such as Burnley, Sheffield United, we moved the ball quickly, side to side. There was a real tempo and intensity about our attacking play, but this today was just the complete opposite. I felt like from all of the first half on the ball, we were very slow. There was no intensity in trying to get Spurs to shuffle across from side to side. It was just slow. Second half was a little bit better, but again, I don't feel like we've done enough to win the game. One thing that was quite frustrating as well is that when we got the ball, the spaces were outside, were on the wide areas, because obviously Spurs compact the middle of the pitch. So going through the middle was just a myth. But when we got the ball out to the fullbacks weren't taking risks. So a lot of the time, especially in the first half, they were just playing it backwards to either one of our midfielders or to the defence.
Do you think that was an instruction from Lampard, or do you think that was just due to the stakes?
I think it was due to the stakes, because I think second half they were a bit more adventurous, so maybe Lampard told them to be a bit more adventurous in the second half. But first half, yeah, I think due to the stakes, it was just they were instilling them to take risks and either carry the ball forward or actually pass forward. They were just passing backwards, and that was it. Chilwell and James guilty of that. So if they were, I would have liked to see them be a bit more adventurous. That was probably that would have been our outlet. And you saw in the second half when James started to take a bit more risks, he got down the line a few times, putting a few balls for Tammy, who made a mess of it. And likewise, Chilwell. So, yeah, overall, performance was disappointing. We didn't do enough to win the game. I guess you can say that we were solid. Well, we didn't really have many attacks to defend, but it's another clean sheet, I guess. That's probably me scraping at the barrel for accolades, really. But, yeah.
Yeah. Tobes, so you're grinning from ear to ear. Mm-hmm. You said you're not reading too much into being top of the table. Yeah. Why are you smiling?
I'm smiling because I was told so much about this amazing Chelsea attack that are scoring goals for fun. Havertz, Pulisic, Werner, all of this mumbo-jumbo.
To be honest, Havertz and Pulisic probably wouldn't have been mentioned. They ain't been doing much this season. But
yeah, I know, but the whole package.
Yeah,
exactly. So they were up against a centre-back who had his first start in the Premier League in his whole career this season. And they were up against Eric Dier, who has been our best centre-back this season, but is Eric Dier. And they couldn't really penetrate. They really couldn't penetrate. And Semi wants to talk about, defensively, we didn't have much to worry about. But from my perspective, I was happy with a point. We don't have a good record at Chelsea. Yeah. And historically, over the past couple of years, we haven't defended well. So to come here, to get a point, to keep a clean sheet, I cannot complain about that. The second half was ugly, but I can't complain about that. And most importantly, I wanted to shout out Ndombele as well. I know he came off on 60 minutes as well, but it's just funny to see Kante, top three best performing defensive midfielders in the league, and Ndombele had him running around circles. So
he played 2/3 of the game. My maths, £1 million of his transfer fee per minute that he was on the pitch.
Hey, let's not focus on the minutes. He played well.
You need to focus on the minutes.
Let's just leave it as that. He played well. How about that? Yeah, can't we just leave it at that? He played well.
No, because let's deconstruct that. You've brought him to the...
Mariah, the diabetes kicks in eventually, bro.
So, obviously, he's physically, he's improved from last season because he's actually able to play on the pitch for a sustained period of time. How long before 60 minutes becomes 90 minutes? And how much does that cap your play when your best midfielder can't play the full game?
The funny thing is, I think he can play more than 60 minutes. Like, I feel like it's exaggerated that he's always blowing after 60 minutes. I get that he's still trying to build his fitness up, but I think he can play more than 60 minutes. But the issue is...
67, 68? Like, why did he consistently come off?
I don't know. I think... At least 75 minutes. I think he can play 75 minutes. Come on. He played 45 minutes midweek and then he played like 60 minutes today. I think he can. But I think that the issue is here.
You just added them up, yeah?
I ain't trying to add anything up. I'm just trying to tell you that the man can play more than 60 minutes.
Let's just smash some numbers together. That's long he can play.
Yes, he can.
He can't.
Yes, he can play more than
60 minutes. The guy is blowing after his third sprint of the match, man. Stop it. Like, he can't. Jose Mourinho is protecting this guy. So he can even last as long as he lasts, man. The guy cannot play. He can't play 75 minutes. Like, the reason he's playing in the position that he's playing, last season, Jose played him centre mid and he wasn't at the races. He couldn't play there. That's why we didn't see him. You were there crying every week. Why is no Ndombele? And you're seeing why, because his fitness ain't there. His athleticism ain't there. He's playing behind the striker, off the ball. He is your furthest player forward. So Jose is protecting him from doing any sort of tracking back because he can't do it. He's not able to do it. So you need to just forget this whole, oh yeah, his fitness is going to, it's just not in him. It's not going to happen.
So you're going to tell me that forever he's going to play 60 minutes, yeah? That's what you're telling me?
Yeah.
Okay, you want to put money on that, yeah?
Bruv, look at this.
No. I just asked you a question.
Okay, let me ask you one back, yeah? Lacazette, when Wenger was hooking him off, After 70 minutes, everyone was saying the same thing. What are we seeing now with Lacazette 4 years later? Is he better athletically or is he worse?
He's like 29 years old, bro.
Yeah,
don't believe.
Answer the question.
Prime, to be fair, 29 is not old.
Come on,
answer the question.
I'm not answering the question.
Why not? Exactly. Why aren't you answering the question? That's a fair question to ask.
I don't want to answer the question.
But why not? Why are you refusing to answer a fair question?
See, he's bottled it. The history
he's
of
bottled it. You bottled it.
Okay, the history, yeah? But didn't we just hit you for six the other day? And you're talking
it
about the
matter.
History of
it doesn't matter.
Here we go.
Okay, cool. Oh, do you get a trophy for that? Cool.
Do you get a trophy
for that? No, we don't.
Don't make us go down the trophy route. Come on.
Come on, G.
We like you, man. We like it, bro.
Karma.
So, Seb, obviously we were watching the game on the Discord. It was a top of the table clash. Shemi and Tobes both say they weren't surprised by the approach, but were you? I mean, Chelsea, I know we've heard a lot about them over the last few weeks, but this was potentially an opportunity for Spurs to really see what they were made of and to maybe perhaps put a statement down and show that they were serious, serious title challengers and to be considered that.
What do you say? It was a statement for Chelsea. I don't know, man. You know, when I look at Jose, I look at him as a manager and how he performs historically over a season. When he's in a certain position, i.e., like he has a chance to go, you know, top of the table, or he's near top of the table, I think the bigger games he's gonna approach with some caution. And for him, I feel like Jose, it's like every manager, they look at all the fixtures.
Is that me or have we lost Seb?
No, we've lost.
All right, Seb, your connection's gone a bit.
And I say, all right, cool. I can get this at all. I should be.
We can't hear you.
Is it gone?
You're back now.
At all.
You're back. Go on.
Oh shit, that's weird. Where did I get up to?
Anyway. Just start again. Start again in terms of cool. Jose's approach.
Cool. Yeah. So Jose's approach in the bigger games, when he's near the top of the table, what I've realized is he don't mind getting a point because it's one of those ones where I'd rather get a point and bring me closer to my goal than, you know, lose. And we've seen that at all of the teams where he's won stuff. So this was something that I knew he would do. For me, I'm more disappointed in Chelsea because they seemed very toothless. Do you know what I mean? They still seem quite similar to last season, even though they have better players. So for me, that was quite interesting to see. But there's no shade on Spurs because they're doing what Jose does. And if he's on top of the table, this is a Jose performance. And then I expect him to go against a lesser side like Arsenal next week and, you know, put a couple goals past Arsenal because I don't think he will respect them. So next week, if he does the same thing, that would be disappointing. But I think he's going to go out and attack Arsenal, in my opinion.
Also, Spurs are truly a team built in the image of their manager. Shemi, anything to add, sir?
Yeah, just to echo what Seb said, Jose, he nitpicks which games he's going to, which big games he's going to get 3 points from, which one's going to get a point from. And yeah, I think they got what they came for today. In terms of Chelsea, I wouldn't agree that we're toothless. I kind of want to challenge that one because I feel like this season we have, in the majority of games, we have played with an attacking flair, albeit against the smaller sides. I would like to see Lampard be a bit more braver in the big games because this season he hasn't. But generally, this season, in the majority of games, I feel like we have played with more attacking freedom. We've scored a lot of goals. I think we're top scorers in the league at the moment. So I wouldn't say we're toothless. I would just say the approach play from Lampard in the bigger games especially just isn't correct. And I feel like he deserves criticism for his in-game management today.
One second, lads. Calling in from the pod is Ant. He wants to say some words.
Hello, Ant.
What's happening, everyone? Who's on?
Mario, Mush, Daniel, Tachi Gunas, Shemi, Toby.
Did Dan tell you a lot about my good deed?
No.
What was it?
He's laughing.
Good deed. Dan's laughing.
let him tell you about my good deed because these men didn't want to take me serious last
week. What was his good deed?
Yeah, basically. And was saying that Eddie Howe would be doing a better job than Arteta, yeah. And I was saying that that's nonsense. Then and put a, we had a bet that we wouldn't I said that we would do better than Eddie Howe's best season at Bournemouth, yeah. And Ant said that we wouldn't. And that best season, I think it's ninth place, scored something like 50 something goals, conceded like 70 something. Or whatever, and I said that, and the bet was that we'd score more than 50 something goals. But I said to him today, "Give me your account details because we're not scoring 50 goals." And he, his kind deed was that he wrote it off. The bar's in hell, man. The bar is in hell.
See, I'm a good person, man. I'm a good person. Hey, but more importantly, yeah, my man's got to go to Lego, man. He's got to go ASAP. We've got to throw whatever we can at Pochettino. Even the Ajax guy. I like the Ajax guy. But yeah, Arteta's got to go early. No more of this nice guy stuff.
Calm. That's ad.
Thanks, Ant.
Wow. Wow.
All right. Touchy Gunas falling apart at the seams, it seems. I like that one. So, Sammy, you said you wanted to question it. So that's a good point. Tammy Abraham.
Yeah. Yeah. So, as I'll say,
first name's actually Kevin, but yes, Tammy Abraham. He was presented with a couple of good or decent looks at goal, which he didn't capitalize on. So, you've got Werner, 50 million in from Leipzig playing out wide. I don't think he necessarily had the best game out there. Were you frustrated that Lampard didn't perhaps make some changes earlier?
Yeah. So that's what I was getting onto actually beforehand. So essentially I was saying that Lampard deserves a bit of criticism for his in-game management today. I feel like often his changes they come too late in the game and it offers little time for the substitutes who are coming on, i.e. Pulisic or Hudson-Odoi or whoever it is. It offers them too little time to impact the game. In terms of your question about Tammy Abraham, I was very frustrated with what he did with the chances that came his way. I felt like Reece put in two good crosses, and I think there was another one from Werner that he could have done much better with. There was the one from Werner, he just literally just fell on the floor, and often Tammy leaves me wanting more. I made a tweet last week that you get the good and the bad with him. So the good in the sense like his attacking position in the box is often quite good. But like in terms of his balance, in terms of his hold up play, in terms of his just general play, it can be just very quite sloppy. And today was another one of those days whereby in the box, when opportunities were presented to him, he just wasn't at it. And it just leaves me a bit frustrated because I feel like in a game like that, sometimes you do just have to take the smash and grab. So he connects with one of those headers, we probably win the game. I would just like to see, I was hoping that Lampard would have moved Werner through the middle and brought on Pulisic, but he seems to prefer a bigger guy up front with Werner playing off of him, which is fine. But I just think today, especially, he could have tweaked it a little bit earlier and possibly, especially the fact that the Tottenham centre back, I can't remember his name, whoever came in today, like Roden. They're quite physical. Roden, yeah. So he's a physical defender, and holding the ball up against backing into him, like trying to do hold up play, I feel like that is what Roden is good at. So I feel like if Werner had gone through the middle, given him a different kind of problem in terms of his pacing behind, we might have asked a few more questions as opposed to playing to Spurs' defensive strengths, which is the physicality. You know, Dyer's physical, he's got the height. So I feel like Werner through the middle might have given them a different type of problem. But yeah, that's just my view.
I think so too. I think pace would have been your biggest strength against those two centre-backs today. Pace and just sort of quick movement. Rodon was struggling initially early doors. Mm. And Werner was looking a bit dangerous on that left-hand channel as well. So I think you definitely would have had a bit more joy if you played 100%. Someone who's a bit more fluid through the middle.
Yeah. Mush, last bit on Chelsea Spurs.
Yeah, no, I think everyone's made some great points here. I think one of the big things for me that I noticed about Lampard's approach, which was quite disappointing and for me quite basic, was that when we all watched the game, I think all of the attacking players made the exact same run or attempted the same types of things. So one thing I've noticed about Lampard, which is quite problematic, is that, let's say I support Liverpool. So when I watch Mane or Salah, they don't make the same run or they don't offer the same movements all the time. Sometimes it's short, sometimes it's central, sometimes it's wide. Whereas today I just saw Werner come around the back post, Tammy tuck in behind the other centre back, and then Ziyech take one step in with the left and then try and whip it in. There was no variety in what the players who are on the pitch did, and it shouldn't take for you to make a sub for you to change your approach. You should be able to change your approach with the personnel you already have on the pitch.
So it's almost like he will just bring on players who have different characteristics and they will execute different actions rather than him telling the players that this is what I've noticed. Like, this is what I've noticed. And Tammy, while not being the fastest, is pretty nippy. So if he did want to perhaps decide to, rather than play the back-to-goal game, actually see what Roden's made of, that's definitely something that he could have done. Yeah, you make a good point there. Seb, I've kept you waiting long enough. More to spare these guys. We're back, baby. No. So obviously we had a game today, 3-2 against Southampton. Take us through your thoughts before the game in terms of the lineup. During the game, obviously at a point we were 2-0 down, and then obviously when El Matador scored the winner.
Yeah, man. So before the game, we done a Patreon piece on Moga. So guys, you know, if you listen to this and you support Manchester United, make sure you sign up to that Patreon. Get, you know, previews of matches or whatever. So yeah, me, Elijah and Michael done their Patreon piece together, and we're just basically going through the match. And for me, I said on that day, I said on the Patreon that we should just vibes it, man. Just vibes it. Like, go for a diamond and play Van der Beek. The reason why I said just vibes is because against Istanbul, we were still quite open through the middle. Do you know what I mean? And Istanbul had a load of chances. And we was actually quite lucky in that match when I think about it. And it was just kind of end to end. And I just wanted to play a similar way against Southampton. I feel like they press. And then also on top of that, with the coach's mindset and what he's instilled into the team, I thought they wouldn't respect us, which is fine. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's cool. You're not going to respect Manchester United. You think that, you know, we're there for the taking. And I thought we'd be able to kind of capitalize on that. So, so obviously the match starts and we see that we're in like a 4-2-3-1-2 type of thing. And for me, Greenwood, he's just in a very, very poor vein of form. And it's one of those things, he needs an arm around him. It happens. It happens to every single striker where they go through long periods of time without scoring, and things that they usually get right without thinking, you know, they're overthinking. They're trying to make it too sure. And when they're trying to make it too sure, they end up missing the chance. And we've seen that happen a few times with Greenwood. So in the first half, he misses key chances, and Southampton have a set piece from a corner. James Ward-Prowse absolutely whips. First goal wasn't De Gea's fault, and then the second goal, a free kick, which I was on Discord saying, yeah, this is a goal, 100%. This is 100% a goal. Someone said it's a pen. I said it might as well have been. I said it might as well have been. I said 100%. If he gets on target, it's a goal, because yeah, like, I just have no trust on De Gea, and James Ward-Prowse is a beast from that position. So anyway, we go 2-0 down. And he takes Greenwood off at halftime. And then I thought that the game was quite similar to like the first 10 minutes of the first half. So the first 10 minutes of the first half, we had all the possession and was doing our thing. And in the second half, I thought that we was kind of doing our thing. And yeah, like, you know, we managed to score 3 decent goals. Bruno can't be defeated. Had the worst ever pass completion I think I've ever seen in the first half. And then he said, fuck it. Yeah, I'm still going to come up trumps. So it gets us in the game. And then Cavani, you know, draws us level. And then Rashford to Cavani for the winner. And it just showed, you know, good spirit. And it just showed that United needed a real number 9. So we've had finished number 9s at this team, and just because they've been world class or like in their previous life, they've managed to show what they could do. And I've always said Martial isn't a number 9, he's just a good player. And Cavani showed it today. The movement, you know, just the finishing is what you expect from a real number 9.
Yeah, interesting stuff. Tobes is nodding his head in agreement. So is,
yeah.
So it was a 4-3-1-2
that
we went with today. Mush, we were talking about Van der Beek before the pod started. So yeah, it would be interesting to get into that and hear a bit more about your thoughts about how he's been used here in comparison to how he was used at Ajax.
Yeah, really, really interesting, because I think all of us kind of associated Van der Beek with like this really clever player who gets into goal scoring positions and kind of, you know, floats his way into the goals and will probably put up high numbers. Whereas
I feel like the way he's currently being used by Solskjaer is just to be like tidiness on the pitch. And it's almost, for me, a player as talented as Van der Beek is basically being used like someone like Harry Winks at Tottenham, like just someone who knows how to turn on the ball on a half turn and just recycle it. And it, for me, it's a similar to what I just said about Lampard. It's a big insult on how you're underutilizing a very talented footballer. And I get that Bruno is doing a lot in terms of contribution, but there's surely got to be a way of getting more out of Van der Beek if you're Manchester United.
Yeah, I think where we struggle is that midfield of ours is not very mobile in the Prem and with the defence that we have. Our first thought is always to make sure we're able to protect the back line. So that's why you see Fred and Matic, and before Fred and McTominay or Matic and McTominay, you see those combinations in front of the back line, because the idea is that we want you guys to stay there and basically be solid, break up play and make sure the back line's never been exposed. Van der Beek, he's not the most athletic, that's fine. Where he does make up for that is with his technical ability, his intelligence in his head. So he's able to, like you say, play out of pressure, link up play with the players. But there is more of a player in there. It's difficult. He plays with Bruno Fernandes, which means it's very difficult to really get into any combination plays in the midfield with Bruno Fernandes. His moves tend to be final moves, Hadoukens only. every pass.
So you can.
That's all he cares about. Like every pass he's making, he's trying to split the defense, and it really does not matter where on the pitch he is. That's all he sees. He really feels like his ability level is limitless, and he wouldn't be the player that he is if he didn't see the game like that. But the problem is how detrimental it can be to your team across 90 minutes. But what I realized a couple of games ago, and anyone who listens to Mugga and Touchline, to be honest, will know I'm not a Bruno fan.
Yeah,
I give up. I can't beat him. I cannot beat him. Doesn't matter how shit he plays. He is going to make sure that he leaves an imprint on that match in a positive way for his team. So in terms of Van der Beek, I think for Ollie, it's almost like come in, do a job. You're more reliable and more technically secure than Pogba is at the moment. And as long as we have that, we've got Bruno to carry us over the edge. And it's Ollie is not in the business of trying to make anything flashy or come up with any philosophies. It's just get my wins, keep my job, get us up the table, essentially. And I'll just keep doing that for as long as I can. And we'll open our eyes after 38 games have been played, and we'll see exactly where we are.
Seb. I just wanted to ask a question to you and Seb as well. So where does Bruno Fernandes rank then as a player? Like, there's normally like your bog standard level. So you got crap, average, good, quality, world class, or whatever. So by what he's doing from an output point of view, surely you'd have to rank him as a quality player. I know he has his
good. He's good. He's no better than good.
So we're not saying that. We're not saying that he's quality.
No, he's good.
I ain't gonna lie. I have to put him as quality.
He has to be quality.
Doesn't have to be anything. You asked me a question, I gave you my answer.
The output is just too much for me. But sorry, just go back on that Van der Beek here. For me, I feel like Van der Beek is actually happy to play in that position, because there's some midfielders that just love touches of the ball. Do you know what I mean? And he'd get more touches on the ball than if he's playing in that floating position. And even before he came, that's what Edwin was saying. Vanessa was saying that, he can play this. He likes to play this position. Likes to play six. Likes to play eight. Likes to play 10. Whatever. And I just feel like midfielders definitely like more touches of the ball. And then on top of that, it's like if the team is rubbish and you're not getting touches of the ball, you turn to not be in the game. And I think we actually saw that quite early on in the season. Was it for Man United or Holland? I can't remember. It was a Holland game where he was playing in that floating position and Holland weren't really playing well, and he was just floating all game. Do you know what I mean? Not getting touches of the ball, trying to do that Dele Alli thing, last touch. And I just feel like a player of his quality, I want him to touch the ball more than players like Bruno. Do you know what I mean? I want him to affect the game in the middle third. Do you know what I mean? I want the round the corners. I want the 1-2s and whatever. And right now, I feel like he's probably the best player in our team to do that currently.
Yeah. Shemi, What are your thoughts on Manchester United and the Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, Bruno Fernandes wagon that just keeps rolling on for some reason?
I actually wanted to, so what Sebi said about Greenwood and his form, I just wanted to like kind of make a point on that. Sure. I feel like with the way United set up, so the way Ole sets up two strikers, he wants them to kind of like split and kind of go wide and then come in sort of thing. And I feel like, I don't know if that setup is best for Greenwood, because I feel like he's very good at like specific like roles and instructions. So I feel like when you set him up with the two up front and you're telling him to split, I feel like he's better at either being played wide or played centrally, because then like he has his like specific role, if that makes sense. I don't know if you lot, I just wanted to know what you lot's thoughts on that was, because I don't feel like that setup gets the best out of him. Because obviously when he's out wide, he can go 1v1, come in, shoot. And then obviously if he plays through the middle by himself, he's a certified clapper. So I feel like those two roles isolated, either one or the other, is kind of how is the best setup for him. I don't feel like him playing in the two and having to split is the best setup to get the best out of him. I don't know what you lot thought about that.
He's going through a bad patch in terms of form and confidence, but it happens. He's a young player. I think where I see things with Greenwood is now he's kind of got that attention of being a player that's dangerous, people playing with more respect. And it means that other parts of his game, which aren't necessarily there yet, which is for me mainly, it's the physical side of his game. And this is a Premier League. We've seen quality footballers who haven't had that physical athletic side of their game be run out of this league. With Greenwood's case, it's more a case of him just growing, physically developing. I think it's problematic for us when he's on the right-hand side, because he normally has to link up with Aaron Wan-Bissaka, and Aaron Wan-Bissaka's not really giving his wide man any space or giving the defence anything to think about, which then means that the fullback has to spread out, which means he's actually getting to be one-on-one with the centre-back. What tends to happen is that the fullback gets to tuck in and the centre-back are both kind of doubling up on Greenwood, and you'll just leave Aaron Wan-Bissaka out wide because it's Aaron Wan-Bissaka, he's not really going to be any trouble. And then when he plays centrally in the middle, he's not really able to play that kind of physical game with the centre-backs. He's going to get bullied all game long. And to be honest, the two chances that he got today are probably the best chances I've seen him have all season, and the best chances I've seen him have from central positions for the first team since he's come through, to be honest with you. And honestly, I'm very surprised that he didn't at least put one of them away. Like, he hits corners. That's what he does, man. But that first chance, I wouldn't have even minded if he's gone wide and he's hit it and the defender blocked it. He didn't even hit the target. And for the second one, which is literally, he's straight on, and obviously we know he favours his left, but he can use either foot. Again, he wasn't clinical there. So I think he's just going through a tough period. I wasn't happy with Ollie taking him off, because I thought that wouldn't necessarily be good for his confidence. But listen, Cavani's come on, grabbed two goals, got an assist, and helped us get the 3 points. And in all honesty, a bad performance today won't be the decider in the sort of career that Mason Greenwood goes on to have with us. So, yeah, he just needs to keep playing, play his way through this, and come out the other side stronger and better for it, really.
Cool. Yeah. I agree. I do agree with that. But it's good that Cavani came on and got those two goals, because I was struggling to see how, you know, because obviously Ollie's not the best at in-game tweaks, and obviously at halftime something needed to kind of change. So I felt like, yeah, Cavani done quite well to like bail you guys out, because other than that, I didn't see how Ollie was gonna kind of.
Yeah, he was all over the place as well. He was on the right hand side. He was on the edge of our box, like breaking up play and linking play. But then, because the legs aren't necessarily there yet, he wasn't then able to get back up the other end. But then he did what he does best, and that movement for those two goals are what he's done for the last half a decade plus. Dan, did you like that? Obviously, that's a number nine right there.
I was going to ask a question. Yeah. Question. What does your season look like then? Like, what's the goals here?
Really? I couldn't tell you. I honestly couldn't tell you. How I feel, I need Ollie gone. I need him gone, because he's not going to take us to... And my feeling is, because it's died down now because he's pulled together a few good results, is that the higher-ups know he's not the guy to take us where we want to go to. But what they're doing is waiting until the results make it a decision that they have to make. And the only time the results would then make it a decision that they have to make is when the season was unredeemable. Basically, like, oh, you can't get top four. Let's get rid of him. And then the guy who has to come in would have to pull off like 15 wins in 17 games or something. I think, again, his target is top four. If he can make top four and keep us in the Champions League, Amad Diallo's coming in January. He comes in with a lot of hype around his name. We then have the summer transfer window to address again some of our issues. The Pogba situation, either he signs a contract or he leaves. Martial, what's going on with Martial? Greenwood's a year older, et cetera, et cetera. But yeah, Liverpool are better than us. Tottenham are better than us. Chelsea are better than us. Spurs are better than us. So I feel like his target is top four. But yeah, there's clearly four teams that are better than us. So we'll see how it goes in regards to that. Well, obviously, we've got a game in hand. And if we win our game in hand, I think that brings us up to fifth. Yeah, so we've got, where are we? We are seventh now with 16 points, 9 games. If we were to win our game in hand, we'd go into 10th place with Leicester also having played the same amount of games, but they've got 2 more points. So we haven't... Have we won a game at home this season yet, Seb?
Yeah, we just won... Who win last week?
West Brom, 1-0.
Yeah, so we
just about beat
West Brom. That's the only one.
I think we lost the other four. So getting the sorting out the home form is key. But yeah, honestly, to tell you, Dan, I don't think he's going to do it. I don't think he's going to last the season. It's a race for Pochettino, really. And I really don't want us to lose out because as much as there's like loads of quality managers on the continent, Pochettino has the qualities that I know of. His qualities are known to me, and I think that would serve us well going forward. We've got a good academy with talented young players who can definitely contribute to the first team in the next 18 to 24 months. I want a manager who has a track record of bringing young players through. I want a manager who understands the league. I want a manager who's shown the ability to adapt tactically, not necessarily the best in game, but he definitely tends to set up his teams, and most of the time his plan A tends to be a good one. And I think this team has enough quality for him to definitely have us up amongst the better teams in the league. And if they back him financially, then we're potentially back in business.
You're saying Poch or bust, yeah? No one else?
Not necessarily no one else, but that's the known quantity to me. The thing is, that's the known quantity to the board. So if they don't get Poch, who the hell are they going to bring in? Who the hell are they? Probably go for Arteta or something. So
I think Nagelsmann fits a lot of what you want. But as you said, you want someone that's known to the league. So that's fair enough.
Yeah. I think Nagelsmann, he's what, 32, 33. I think where you have these managers who are good tacticians, I think that the man management side is something that we definitely underrate. And while there are other managers that I like in the league, just the Premier League that is at lower teams, I think it's that ability to come in and command the dressing room from the get-go. It's like the impact that Jose Mourinho had at Spurs, for example. Like, they had Pochettino and they got close to the mountaintop, but it didn't quite get there. And a manager who's come in and who's won everything in the game has come in and been like, listen, you guys are really good, but you haven't won, and this is why you haven't won. And they're all ears, and they'll go out there and play that shit football, but they know it's going to get them, they know it's going to get them results, and those results are going to get them closer to potentially winning things. So I don't know what Nagelsmann, like, he hasn't won anything, you know, and he's coming in and he'll probably have interesting philosophies and they may listen for a while, but then the results have to be good, because the minute your results aren't good and you don't have the respect of the dressing room, then straight away your back's against, well, who's this guy? Got this guy from Germany. They've got players in the dressing room who are older than him. It's tough, man. This football managing malarkey is not easy. Managers have made it look easy, but yeah.
Give me Wenger.
Come on, man. Granddad. Give me Wenger, mate. 100 years old, Wenger, man.
You can't have them Nagelsmann suits on the touchline, man. At big OT, you can't have them suits, man.
Cool. Can I just make one final point on Bruno, just really quickly?
Do whatever you like.
I feel like, so with the whole, in regards to the whole you can't beat him type thing and whatever, and obviously his pass completion not being great, but him having an impact, I feel like whilst you guys are not great, like, so however long that continues, I feel like his impact is going to
always out. Like, it's going to kind of, you're not going to be able to beat him while you're a bad team, because obviously when he's scoring and he's impacting the game, it's dragging you through. Do you get me? It's dragging you through the hard times. It's dragging you through when you're down or whatever. I feel like if you guys were a really good team, so let's say like you were playing to the level of like a City were under Pep in his second season, for example, where everyone else plays to a really high level, then you've got that one guy that doesn't play to as high as a level as everyone else. I feel like it comes out a little bit more, even though they might still score, they might still assist, because everyone else is scoring and assisting. Do you understand what I'm saying? Whereas when it's just him that's doing it in a bad team, I don't think you're going to beat him until...
Agreed. But what does a team that where he is standing out for those errors, but then everybody around him is doing a good job, what does a team like that look like? Is that a team that's now competing for the title? And then he's just a player within the team that's sloppy? Because if with the current team, who are unable to play, he's able to put in performances which are getting us good results. If you improve the players around him, how good does the overall team get? Do you understand what I'm saying? And then if you're winning, you know how it goes. If you're winning, the fans ain't going to complain very much, to be honest.
Yeah, for you. Yeah, yeah.
Also, though, that one thing, Mariah, you're right there. And the other thing is, Shemi's talking about building a team, which I completely agree with. But you can't build a team and phase Bruno out at the same time. Because if Bruno keeps producing, you're not going to build that team minus Bruno, are you? So you can't get the best of both.
To be fair, I'm not necessarily talking about building a team per se. I'm just describing the state in which United are right now.
How
as a team they are in general, which is not very good. But if they were good, then maybe it wouldn't.
What happens with Bruno? Yeah, so I don't see things
changing. Cool down yourself about not very good. You know the ones, yeah, where like someone's bullying your little brother in school, you say like only I can bully them. Do you know what I mean? Like only I can call Man United shit. Do you know what I'm saying, bro? Yeah. Cool down there, yeah.
Well, I can't call United. I can't call our seat, no.
Yeah, cool down, man. Yeah, don't let me start today.
For more goals than Martial in the league.
Oh. Who?
Havertz.
Me.
What it cost double Martial, so I'd expect that.
I mean, he doesn't play at the top of the pitch, but it's fine.
Yeah.
Sorry. Yeah, cool. Yeah, well done, Shemi. He come prepared. He's been listening to the pod, Seb, so he's ready. When I spit bars in a
rave, man, I go hard, last and tan. Hello, me here from Touchline Frackers. 2020 has already reshaped how we work, and it's almost over. So businesses all over the globe have been challenged to be their most efficient, and that means that every single hire that they have is critical. Indeed are the number one job site in the world, with more total visits than any other job site. Indeed helps you find quality candidates quickly, so you can focus on hiring the right person for your business. Unlike other job sites, Indeed gives you full control and payment flexibility over your hiring, so you only pay for what you need. And now, Indeed's new way of matching you with candidates instantly delivers a short list of quality candidates whose resumes on Indeed match your job criteria that you can contact the moment you sponsor a job, making Indeed the only job site that can move as fast as you do. Right now, Indeed is offering our listeners a free $75 credit to boost your job post, which means more quality candidates will see it fast. Try Indeed out for a free $75 credit at indeed.com/BlueWire. This is their best offer available anywhere. Go right now to indeed.com/BlueWire. Offer valid through December 31st. Terms and conditions apply. When I spit bars in a rave,
man, I go hard, last and tan. Mosh, we've kept you waiting long enough. You're reigning champs. A 1-1 draw against Brighton. What were the thoughts that came across to you after that game? What did it cost, essentially? Obviously, you rested players. Sounds like it cost you everything, to be honest. Yeah, I'd like to hear from you.
Yeah, don't worry. I won't treat you like Des, Mariah. Don't worry about it, man. I'll go easy. But no, I think it's really interesting because the midweek game was a bit of a preview of the fact of, I think some Liverpool fans are a bit kind of disillusioned with kind of where they actually sit. So yeah, Liverpool are amazing, but Liverpool are amazing when you consider the players who play for Liverpool, right? So Liverpool with Virgil van Dijk and all of these other players, yes, they're amazing. But the moment Virgil van Dijk's not playing and all of these other top players aren't playing, you've got to adjust your expectations. So we're coming up against a Brighton side who, in all honesty, I thought without Lamptey playing, we were actually looking forward to playing them because you thought that was a big, big loss for them. But I credit to Graham Potter. I thought he was very clever and played three strikers up top. And that kind of pinned Robertson back completely because all of the runs were being made in behind our fullbacks. And I'm sure anyone who watched the game saw they were getting in behind left, right and centre. And then I think the other problem was that you've got someone like James Milner, who I'm sure everyone thinks is a good player and has been a good player for a long time. But at 34, you can't expect him to play three games in 6 days. And obviously that ties into what Klopp's saying. But when you amount that with injuries where you can't replace him, it doesn't help. And then, boy, some of the players who stepped in, looks like we picked them up from that PLT sale, man, because bloody Minamino was dreadful and I want to see more from him, but I think the chances are going down. Nico Williams doesn't look good. And the problem is when you're, you know, replacing someone like Trent Alexander-Arnold, you've got a lot to live up to. So it's harsh on him, but ultimately if you're playing for a team as good as Liverpool at the moment, you're going to be judged by that standard. And I'm not annoyed by the result in the sense of, I mean, we all want 3 points, but if you're playing against a team who's missed a penalty, they missed a few clear-cut chances, you got to kind of just take it on the chin. I tweeted myself, and I think a lot of you guys agreed, VAR didn't get anything wrong. If it was, you know, a Brighton fullback who kicked Mane to the ground, I'd be screaming for it. If it was Welbeck, who was a yard offside scoring a header, I'd be angry about it. So we can't say that VAR is incorrect just when things go against our team. You know what I mean? So I think the worrying thing for me is obviously I believe in the team and believe we're good, but all of the players that make us good because of the scheduling we have aren't going to play every week at the same time. So it's about, are those players who are going to come in and replace them able to bridge the gap? I thought Jordan Henderson was fantastic when he came on, completely controlled that game. Game only really spun when Williams came off and we had 19-year-old Curtis Jones as a centre mid playing at right back, and you could just see they were just tucking in behind on that left side. So for me, it's not the be-all and end-all for how much mess there was going on before this game. We did well, but Liverpool need to find a way. You can't cry about Van Dijk being injured all the time. Whatever players are wearing that Liverpool shirt need to find a way of getting 3 points if they think they're good enough to play for the club and win in the Premier League.
That's some tough love there. Go on, Tobes.
Yeah, you need to also tell your players to practice what you preach as well with the whole if you're gonna call something out as a bogus decision, then you need to call it out when it goes in your favor. Because I saw some nasty behavior from James Milner as well. Like, he's someone who's very reserved, keeps himself to himself. So for him to come out and tweet all that, oh, what happened to clear and obvious with the VAR stuff, it's nasty. And I think Jurgen Klopp as well, he needs to practice what he preaches too, because I feel like, not for the first time, whenever things don't go Liverpool's way, because you've had it so used to going your way over the past couple of years, you lot spit your dummy out and you act like babies in social media or in the public eye. And it really irks me. Jurgen Klopp is bitching and moaning about scheduling, he's doing X, Y, and Z. And yet, when everything works in your favor, he's silent. I don't understand that.
I disagree with that completely, though, Tobes, because why? His whole interview before the Leicester game, which we won and was probably our best performance of the season, was that same rant. So Jurgen Klopp isn't doing that bitch boy thing of only speaking up when things go wrong. He's talking about it whether things go right or wrong. So I give him credit for that. And at least he's been consistent. Sebi talked about it as well. These cowards at the bottom of the league who thought, yeah, they'll get a week's rest rather than 3 days like the teams we support, they're the ones who are all suffering as well. So, you know, there's managers. It's showing, BT Sport showed a clip of Ollie saying the same thing last week. I think until the smaller teams have players who go down, these bigger managers combined need to speak up, because it's not just Jurgen Klopp who thinks it, and he's not just saying it when it's the result that doesn't go his way.
Yeah, but I wasn't just focusing on Jurgen Klopp. I'm talking about your players as well. There's a culture, whether it's with fans or with players, with Liverpool. Whenever it goes in your favour, there's no talk, there's no nothing. But when it goes against you, you're all up in arms. You're saying there's an agenda, there's a Liverpool agenda. There is no Liverpool agenda. And I think that just needs to be put to bed.
Yeah, I don't think there's an agenda, personally. I think we've got players And you see this with winners from all kinds of sports. No winner is a good loser. And there's no way of being a gracious loser. And I don't want my players to be gracious losers. So if they look like they're bitter, if they look like they're pathetic, if they look like they're throwing their toys out the pram, I'd rather they do that if that's the same mentality that fuels them to win the big trophies.
Makes sense. Makes sense. Yeah.
Even the way you dropped trophies,
that film, didn't it?
Yeah, you dropped trophies on your head top, man. He dropped that on your head top.
Yeah, he dropped that on your head top.
I can't say anything.
Sometimes like, oh shit, you might have gutted me there.
You got me there. You got me there.
All right. Cool. So yeah, let's talk about Klopp. So yeah, obviously he did say around the Leicester game as well. So I agree with you there, Mush, that he wasn't just complaining. One thing that was interesting to me, because then he had a little like mini rant on the BBC as well. Going around the room, was that a penalty? I'll start with you, Dan Coogs.
You're on mute. Of course it was a pen. Like, the thing is, it's funny because James Milner came out and doing all his games gone tweets, you know, like, oh, is anyone else falling out of love with the sport? Yeah, but 3 weeks ago, when it was West Ham, Masuaku done the exact same thing to Mo Salah, I didn't see none of this. Yeah, they're actually like, this is the thing. Liverpool players, the fans, they have zero shame. They have zero self-awareness. Yeah, it's pathetic from them. Every time a smidgen of a decision is remotely controversial, and this one wasn't even controversial, they start crying. Biggest victims in the world. Yeah, I'm sorry. Mo Salah wins softer pens than that every other week, yeah, and I see nothing from them, nothing from the fans, nothing from Klopp. You know, what's that one from 2 years ago? It could have been blow by blow, the stuff that was coming out of his mouth about this match. Oh, you think that was a pen going at the interviewer? You think that was a pen in his dead New Balance tracksuit? Yeah, like this guy, he needs to wind his neck in and just take the wheat with the chaff. Yeah, like. When things go your way, you're silent. When things don't go your way, stay silent as well and just take your L, man. It's rubbish. That was a stonewall pen, and I don't want to hear no hype from any Liverpool fans about it. It's so annoying. I'm sick of it.
All right. So you literally just doubled down with what Tobe said. You ignored my question and just doubled down with what Tobe said.
I answered the question. It was a pen.
I respect it. Zebby, the offside. Salah's supposed offside. It looks like if it was offside and it was by a toe, and I think Mush, you were talking about, you did tweet about, and I responded to you. What the feedback was? Yeah, that's offside, but that's not what VAR was brought in for. Where do you stand with that? When somebody can be offside by just a toe or a kneecap or whatever the case it may be.
You know what, like I could run an agenda on Liverpool and say that they get the decisions and whatever, but I feel like it's more so like being offside by your toe or whatever for me should be allowed. Do you know what I mean? Like, it should be allowed because personally, it's a gain of thin margins. And from what I heard, there is a degree of error with VAR. So if there's a degree of error with VAR, being offside by your toe, technically, in like, because there's a degree, nobody actually knows. It's just we're relying on the lines, and the lines are not 100% accurate. So nobody actually knows. So I feel like, in my opinion, there should be some leeway in regards to that. But there needs to be consistency, because we've seen the same thing. We've seen like a fingernail. Do you know what I mean? We've seen the smallest margin given. So it's just about consistency. If there's consistency throughout the board, there's not going to be an issue. Nobody's going to complain. It's going to be like, all right, cool. This is the way we implement it. Not one ref not going to VAR today. For example, for like Rashford, not going VAR because of what happened yesterday. And then Salah, the shoulder is just offside, so we're just going to let it go. Let everybody know the rules and everybody implement VAR the same. There can't be a little bit of change. It's supposed to be clear and obvious, but some are not clear and obvious. Some are, and certain refs not refusing to actually look at it. Yeah, there just needs to be better reffing and just better implementation of VAR in general. And also, there should be allowances for a degree of error.
Do you know what? Just to expand on that as well, Seb, did you know that there's actually You know, when they're looking at the recordings and they're looking at the freeze frames, there's actually apparently 24 individual frames which they choose when they decide the ball actually came off the foot.
Came off the foot. That's key. Yeah.
So when they're looking at a frame, is it the ball, the foot first touching the ball, or is the ball leaving the foot? They can't decide. Do you know what I mean? I'm not actually bitter about the Salah offside, because if it's offside, then it's offside. What I found a bit weird was, what is this 240p quality video that they're looking at? My man's, Ben White's foot was all pixelated. You couldn't even see where his foot ended. So fine, it's offside if they decided it, but it's decided on nonsense. It's decided on Microsoft Paint. So I don't agree with
that. And the lines as well. The lines are all over the shop sometimes.
I agree. This is degree. This is degree of error. Like, the lines are all over the shop. I feel like there should be allowances in it. Like, there should be allowances. But if one's offside, like, I remember Rashford had one. Rashford actually, I think it might have been Champions League. I can't remember, where Rashford is definitely offside. Yeah. And they've given it to him. Yeah, I don't know if it's Champions League or one of the cup competitions, or it might even be, I can't remember.
Yeah, but Leipzig.
He was offside, and because he had a sick performance, it wasn't even a Leipzig. It wasn't Leipzig. I think it might have been when he played up top, and he played so sick that game, and I think he scored the final goal, and everybody was like, Rashford deserved the goal, and he was offside in that match, and they gave it to him. Do you know what I mean? And it's just about, listen, I just need consistency, innit? Simple as that.
My thing is, I feel like the benefit should always be given to the attacker, like, if there's doubt. So, like, if you looked at the Salah, I guarantee if they showed a different angle of the Salah offside, he might have looked onside. Do you understand what I'm saying? So as long as there's any type of doubt, I think the benefit should be given to the attacker. So if I was a Liverpool fan, I would be a little bit aggrieved of it, but that's just what VAR is now, so you just have to accept it.
Yeah, I agree. We watch the game to be entertained, don't we? Entertainment usually comes in the form of goals. Not always Tobes, obviously, as today will attest to for you. But everything that promotes that entertainment should be what they're promoting. So I get it. And to be honest, on the balance of the match, Brighton definitely did deserve something. And when I think of Graham Potter, that's one of the managers I think of who show that they're a really good coach, but probably needs that kind of few more jobs before he could manage a team like Manchester United. But every time I watch Brighton, I'm impressed. Most of the time they end up losing just because their strikers aren't good enough and their attackers aren't good enough to execute the positions that they get put in. So let's just finish up by talking a bit about our midweek games. I'll start with you, Shemi. So you guys are through now in your group, aren't you?
Yeah, we're through.
So what's the goal? You've got Sevilla again, haven't you? So what's the goal to try and finish as high as you can? Do you think you're getting a Pulisic, Callum Hudson-Odoi, Petr Cech, Tomori, Aspilicueta, the usual band, or do you think you're going to play some of your starters?
So I think, in terms of the lineup, I think Pulisic will start. I think Hudson-Odoi will start. I think he'll go with Giroud because Werner needs a rest, and so does Tammy, to be fair. I want top spot because, having looked at all the groups across the Champions League, there are a few favourable draws for getting top spot. I feel like this year the Champions League is different, whereas other years getting top spot wouldn't really matter. But this year it seems as if, because obviously, whereas some of the big teams have kind of fallen off, so like teams like Atletico, teams like Real, Barca, getting the second place team doesn't seem as daunting as previous years. So yeah, personally, I want top spot. I think he'll mix it up and go with some of the rotational players as well as the core starting 11. So I think guys like Thiago will still start because he didn't play in midweek this week. I think guys like James will still play, but then rotational guys like Hudson-Odoi, Giroud will probably come in too. So yeah, I hope we win. I want top spot so that we can go for a more favourable draw.
Yeah. Tobes, what's going on in the Europa League? I'll be honest, I ain't got a clue, mate. Where are you in your group? Who you playing? Now, Vinicius scored a couple of goals on Thursday. Yeah, what's going on with that?
Yeah, so we are we're top of our group, I believe. I think we are. To be honest, I'm not really paying much attention to it as well. I just watch our our matches and keep it stepping. But I think we're top of our group, and I know we play Lask away from home next. We flogged them 3-0 in the home game. They're not a good side, so really and truly, barring any sort of attitude shift, we should get a win, and we should get a comfortable win as well. I just hope that the players have the right mentality, because the players he's going to put into that game with the NL, with the North London Derby on Sunday, we're going to see Vinicius, we're going to see Winks, we're going to see Gareth Bale, we're going to see
Dele Alli.
Lucas Moura, Dele Alli. Yeah, we're going to see all those players. So I just want them to carry the same attitude they had in our previous match against against Ludogorets into that game, just so we don't have to use any of our key starters for that North London derby.
Yeah, it's weird. You're second, but you've got a better goal difference, and I think it's going off the head to head. You lost.
Yeah, we lost to Royal Antwerp,
and they so they've got less goals but the same points, so they've given them first. So
yeah.
So you're second in your group.
Ridiculous.
Coots, what's going on with you lot? Pepe looking like the Thursday night Neymar.
Fam, that guy's a myth as well. Yeah, but yeah, Europa League group stage is just what is it? It's just like five-a-side friendlies, isn't it? Whatever. You can play anyone in those matches against them. Who do we play this week? We played Molde, I think. That's Ole's old team, you know. So obviously they've got a lot of pedigree, you know, because that was enough to get him the United job. So, you know, they're solid outfit. Managed to beat them 3-0. Yeah, man. You don't need to watch the Europa League until the quarterfinals. Although saying that, with Arteta in charge, we managed to go out in the last 16 last year. So I should actually be worried. I should be worried.
You should be fine this season. You got a bit more strength in depth, right?
I don't know about that, man.
On Europa League, though, before you move off, Mariah, with Shemi made a great point about like some of the elite European sides not looking as strong as they were. But it seems like there could be some interesting teams dropping to the Europa League as well. So like your group, for instance, with Man United, one of Leipzig or PSG, or maybe even you. I don't know what the the gap is, but someone's dropping down to the Europa League.
Why are you laughing?
Here, so. I don't know the standings. That's why I was laughing.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I'll get the standings for you, big man.
Yeah.
So we're top with 9 points.
Okay.
PSG are second with 6. Yeah. Leipzig are third with 6, but just a negative goal difference.
Okay.
Then Istanbul are bottom of the group with 3rd. So, a few decent teams potentially.
Yeah. Inter Milan as well. There's a few others as well. So it could make the Europa League a bit more interesting, but yeah, I don't want to talk about that competition anymore.
Seb, as a Tobes has nicely kind of segued into our situation. Yeah, we're top of our group. We missed a trick not beating Istanbul. So now we need a result against either Leipzig or PSG. How confident are you feeling that we'll get that? Well, I think we only really need a draw in one of those two games, and that will be good for us to go through.
I think we'll get a draw from one of them. I don't think it'll be against PSG, which is cool. I feel like we'll definitely get a draw against Leipzig. But again, Istanbul could beat Leipzig, do you know what I'm saying? So, I think we'll get a draw against Leipzig and I think we'll be through. But just touching on Europa League, the state of the Europa League looks like, you know, like pickup games in a park. Do you know what I mean? Like, you just see random Eastern European youths say, yeah, join my team. That's how the Europa League is looking like, bruv.
I just want to know about you lot's midweek games. Everyone's throwing shade at everybody
else. Yeah, man.
Just give me the state of play and keep it moving, please.
Sorry, but just on that, I know we want to keep it moving, but why do you think you can't beat PSG? Because they've been pony in the Champions League.
They've been poor.
I watched the game against Leipzig.
They were poor
this week, and Leipzig literally had them in their half for about 70 minutes of the whole game. Leipzig just had the cutting edge, just couldn't score, but they had all the possession, all the play.
If we beat PSG, I'm happy.
PSG looks so poor.
If we beat them, I'm happy. I'm just saying, like, we need to get a draw. And then, like, again, it's not even about more so PSG. It's about us, innit? We're up and down. And that's literally it. Like, we can lose against anybody, beat anybody, and that's literally it.
That's the Manchester United roller coaster at this current moment in time. Mush, you guys, you need to win, right? How are you doing in your group? You're top of your group. So you've got 9 points. Ajax have got 7. Atalanta have got 7. Midtjylland, or however you say it, Shemi, have got no points. A win against Ajax and you're through, yeah?
Yeah. It's a tough one because there's similar to your group, probably a bit less so, but we've got 3 good teams in our group and then one kind of, you know, the boys you batter. So I think the thing for us is that Klopp rested Matip completely in the last game. So he'll be coming in. I think Trent might be back. And then I think Jota, Klopp's trying to do it such that Jota, Mane and Salah all don't start the same amount of games. So I think Jota started two or three in a row now. So he'll come out. Bobby Firmino did have a good game against Brighton, actually, in terms of linking up. So I think it will be the classic Mane, Salah, Firmino up top. Henderson's back as well. So a bit more of the familiar spine. I think that made us a good side. Personally, I'm not too bothered. Obviously, I want to get the group wrapped up so there's not too much riding on that last game. But that last game's against Midtjylland anyway. So I'm not too panicky about it. We're in a good position. Just need to get the job done, hopefully on this week, or otherwise we do it next week.
Okay, so I've got one listener question. It's called Houdini. So it's a question. The team that's impressed you the most, the team that's impressed you the least, your three teams to get relegated, and your top four and your title winners. So that's pretty in-depth question for Houdini. Shout out Houdini, long-time listener of the pod. Yeah, so I guess rather than having you all go around and answer the same question like five times, I'd rather we do this as a group. So we'll start with the team that's impressed us the most. We're a quarter of the way through the season now. So yeah, I'm open to hear suggestions.
Spurs?
Southampton.
Southampton, okay.
Mine's Spurs as well, I think.
Yeah, us. I'd say
Spurs.
I'd rather you think of somebody else, Tobes.
All right, back up. I would say Southampton. I like what Hasenhüttl was doing.
Okay, I'll go with Spurs as well then. So we'll say Spurs have been the most impressive team thus far. What have you had as your least impressive team thus far?
Arsenal.
Yeah, we're up there.
Arsenal.
I think
Sheffield United
as well. Yeah, I think they've been quite disappointed given their good season last year as well.
They had a good season last year, but I feel like they overachieved when you look at the players they had. I think relative to the players you have, it's been a shit show, really. I'm saying Arsenal.
I'm saying Arsenal too.
Yeah, Arsenal.
Just to change it up, I'll go Newcastle because I think they've had four shots all season so far.
Four shots on target.
Honestly, they don't do anything all game. They're actually
so jammy.
How have they got four wins?
They're jammy. they're literally jammy, man.
They won their first two games of the season with one shot on target in both games. So they're just
I think one was a penalty as well. So
one you can't beat them, man. Cool.
Crystal Palace is another one that's disappointed.
Disappointing, yeah. Okay. What are your three teams to go down?
Fulham, West Brom, and Sheffield United.
Yeah. Anybody have any different teams?
I'm going Fulham, Burnley, and West Brom.
Burnley do this every year, man. They do this every year.
I know.
Close our eyes. We'll get to March.
Daishi's lured me in this time. I don't believe in Daishi.
We'll get to March and they'll be like 10th somehow. Like, you just put okay, cool. And would you guys have as your top four?
Liverpool, Spurs, Chelsea, City.
I don't know if I can.
Yeah. I think
Man United, Spurs, Chelsea, City.
He's saying it in order as well. I'm telling you.
I am.
I agree with the rest of you. So unfortunately, Seb, you've been outvoted in this particular scenario. And who do we have as our champions?
Man United.
Seb goes to Man United. Tobes?
I'm still going to have to go with Liverpool.
Liverpool, yeah?
Yeah.
Shemi?
Liverpool.
Liverpool for me.
I think Dan's thinking, or...
Sorry, what was that?
Dan's reflecting, bro. Arteta's got him reflecting.
Champion. I was asking who you have.
Champion. Yeah, Liverpool. Them.
And Mush, you said Liverpool as well, yeah?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, cool. So thank you all for your time this evening. Mush, pleasure to have you on. Dan, Seb, Tobes, Shemi, your regulars. So I won't thank you too much. Doing your jobs, really. Have a nice evening. We'll keep it locked. Dan, listen, if you need anything, brother, just let me know. I'm here for you, man.
I might have to have a nightcap, you know.
On a Sunday.
We hate to see it, genuinely, man. But lads, seriously, thank you all for your time this evening.
Take care.
Take care.
Peace. Peace.
Podcast Network.